I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks.
Herzlich willkommen zum Larger Living Podcast, dein Podcast zum original intuitiven Essen nach Rash und Triboli, Health at Every Size, Body Image, Feminismus und einer Prise Ethnologie. Ich bin Dot und ich bin deine Wegweiserin raus aus dem Diätendschungel hin zu mehr Selbstakzeptanz, mehr Selbstvertrauen, gesunder Selbstfürsorge und Frieden mit dem Essen und deinem Körper. Lehn dich zurück, mach's dir gemütlich, schnapp dir ein Heißgetränk deiner Wahl. Wir legen los.
Hi Reagan, I am so thrilled to have you on the podcast. Like I told you before, a few sentences before, you've been one of my personal stepping stone towards fat liberation, fat acceptance and just, you know, overall celebrating the size I'm in actually. This is why I can't believe it that I have you here today, truly. So I, of course, know you. I know you as a fat athlete or a fat lead, right? fat lead. There you go. As a dancer, as a genius blogger. Your blog is called Dances with Fat. I really love it. So helpful, like everyday advice for, yeah, everyone. All people, basically, not just fat people, everyone. Yeah, of course, speaker, writer, your book, Fat, the User's Manual, is still available on your blog. Yeah, you're very inspirational. You really are. Your posts on Instagram also, or on social media in general, I think you're an awesome writer because you really have this talent of putting like larger political, socio-political issues into a few characters and distilling them and just really show inadequacies and injustices in them and just like, no, like, look, this is not okay. And here's why. And I love that about you. And I'm thrilled you're here.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here and I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing. So I'm just happy to get to be like a little bit of that. Thank you.
Thank you for your support. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the state of health at every size, intuitive eating, fat activism in Germany and what kind of hurdles. Oh, ooh, metaphors. What kind of hurdles we have to jump over to raise awareness for it? Because the thing is that the original book, Intuitive Eating, from Elise Rash and Evelyn Triboli, has been published in Germany under absolutely annoying title that translates to intuitive weight loss.
Yeah. Jinkies.
Yeah, jinkies. In general, like, what do you tell people who think still that fat people cannot be athletes?
I mean, those people are simply denying reality at this point. I mean, I do fitnessy things. There are people out there, Martinez Evans, Latoya Shante Snell, Myrna Valeria. There are people out there doing incredibly athletic things. And a lot of it is just blatant fat phobia.
Yeah.
I remember getting a troll comment that said, you might do athletic things, but that doesn't make you an athlete. And I was like, it kind of does. Like, that's kind of how that works.
Definition.
And there's this belief that if you're fat, you like that automatically disqualifies you. It doesn't matter what you do, right? You could be running ultra marathons. You could be in the Olympics. They don't care. And there are and have been fat people in the Olympics, right? And that, well, they don't count as an athlete regardless. Yeah. And that's just denying reality in the service of your own fat phobia. And I'm just not really here for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I also want to say, I always want to say when I talk about fitness,
yeah,
fitness, it's not an obligation. It's not a barometer of worthiness. It's not entirely within our control. And participating does not make you any better than people who choose to do something else with their time. Like, I've literally done both. So I can tell you for sure that running a marathon and having a Netflix marathon are morally equivalent activities. And if you go slow enough, they're both an option to waste an entire Sunday.
I love it. I'm dying over here. That's awesome.
It's real.
Can I quote you on this? I love this. I absolutely love this. Yeah, exactly. And also, like, health is not an obligation of any kind, moral exactly. or else. And look, even if you appear quote unquote healthy, you might not be, and you cannot judge a person's health status just by looking at them, and neither should you, because it's actually not that important. It's not. And like, there are people running around with, you know, high blood pressure, and you cannot know. There are people running around with type 1 and 2 diabetes, big and small and tall and short and of all shapes, sizes, and colors. You cannot tell. There is no such thing as a quote-unquote fatty disease of any kind, or a disease that is linked to a certain body size. No, like, there isn't. And I love that. Like, always when I think about a fat athlete, I mainly think of you, just because you are very present in that. But when I researched you, I came across an article saying that you started your first, I think, triathlon. And it was a bet or something. Care to elaborate on that?
That my first triathlon was a bet?
Mm-hmm.
No, my first triathlon was a disaster, but it wasn't a bet.
Oh, okay.
No, I started triathlon because I found out I had done one marathon, mm-hmm. and I found out afterwards that I could get a Guinness World Record for being the heaviest woman to complete a marathon.
There you go.
And I just thought, oh, cool, I'll send in my time. They'll send me my Guinness World Record. It'll be great. And that is so not how it works. You have to do one. I had to do another one in order to do it. And you have to have observers, and you have to record the entire thing. I had to wear a camera the whole time. Oh, somebody watched, you know, 10 hours of me heavy breathing and like walking. I don't know. But yeah, so I started to do triathlon because I needed motivation to train for a second marathon, and I couldn't get it going. So I, you know, started listening to these audiobooks of other athletes, and a lot of them had done Ironman triathlons.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the whole thing, the reason I just wanted to step out of my comfort zone was how I kind of started this, because I have always been participating in sports and fitness, but I had always done things I was good at immediately.
Mm.
So like, I quit high school track in the first 10 seconds because they told me they wanted me to sprint and to throw like javelin or discus or whatever. And that sounded fun to me. And then I got to practice and they were like, all right, we start every day with a 2-mile run for warm up. And I was like, bye.
No, bitch.
I'd rather shave my head with a cheese grater than run 2 miles after school every day. Sounds like punishment to me. So I realized that there were probably things I could learn about myself as an athlete if I actually did things that I wasn't good at immediately. And that was kind of the journey of doing the first marathon, and then now the journey through triathlon. And it turns out, like, because the things I'm good at immediately, I tend to improve pretty fast too. And that has not been the case. So it's been an interesting view of the other side of, like, you know, being the quote unquote stereotype. I'm both fat and slow, glacially slow, you know, and being at the back of the pack and struggling with that, and like having to learn about myself in that situation has been really just personally helpful to me. Yeah. You know, meeting all these amazing people of all sizes who are the back of the pack is what we refer to ourselves, the people who are sort of at the end of each race. Mm-hmm. And it's like a different life, because the people at the front, like, they're getting aid stations and cheering crowds and bathrooms and medical stations. And by the time they get to us, they've often closed all of that down. So yeah. We're more like a survival group, like sharing resources, going to bars to fill up our water bottles, trying to get Starbucks to let us use the bathroom, like, along the way.
Oh my gosh.
So it's so different. Anyway, I'm veering way off track, but yeah, that's how I kind of got into it.
Interesting. I never thought of it, actually. I mean, I figured out the whole bathroom kind of thing and the whole water bottle kind of thing, but yeah. Yeah, it makes so much sense, obviously. Of Of course.
Yeah. My first marathon, instead of finishing, which my best friend Calvert came along with me on because he is an amazing best friend. But like, instead of finishing in a stadium with a cheering crowd, like we were supposed to, it took me so long that we finished in a dark alley with the stadium locked up and like three people who gave us a banana and a Mylar blanket. And we're like, good job. And then, of course, our, you know, Julianne was there, my partner, you know, cheering and screaming. And but it was just like a totally different finish.
Yeah. Yeah. It like the first thought that I had pop in my mind was, I run a marathon and all I got is this lousy banana.
It's real. All I wanted at that point, though, was a porta potty, and they had left one. And I've never been so grateful for a super smelly porta potty in my life, because by the time we got to like mile 11-ish, 13-ish, they took down the porta potties on the course.
No.
So like half the marathon, we didn't have access to any water, any porta potties. It was so bad. And at some point, it was in Seattle, and I was like, you know, they had they call the support and gear or SAG wagon, which is the person who stays with the person who's last. And I was like, you know, is there a bathroom around here? And she's like, no, but you could just like squat down in somebody's yard. And it had to be the richest area in Seattle. Like someone had explained to us that, like, oh, Kurt Cobain's old house is here. And I was like, you know what I'm not going to do is that. Like, I'm definitely going to end up on somebody's security camera. That's definitely going to end up on Reddit. Like, I may get arrested. Like, I'm 100% not going to pee in a rich person's yard in Seattle. That's not going to happen. I will just hold it. So by the time we got to the end, I didn't care about the banana or the Mylar blanket as much as I cared about being able to pee.
Yeah, no shit. Or pee in that, for that matter. But yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Sometimes. And then I signed up for another one. I make bad choices.
Like, do you have any particular masochistic, I don't know, side of you?
Really, no, I really like medals. And the only place to get them is at the end of the race, as it turns out. No, I set out to do something that seemed like the farthest thing outside my comfort zone. Mm. And the marathon was the first thing I thought of. And then once I did one, once I figured out, oh, I could have a Guinness World Record, like that was too much to turn down. And so I decided to try. And then when I found out about Ironman Triathlon, I was like, well, here's an opportunity to suck at three sports instead of just the one over like a really long period of time. And so that really pulled to me. And so then once I set the goal, like it was supposed to be a 2-year journey to do the Ironman, and it has been a straight up debacle. And so it's 5 now, going to be 6 years with quarantine. I haven't just haven't been able to train for the last 8 months. Sure. So I'm going to have to be starting over as whenever we can get out of here safely. But yeah, I just don't want to give up on that goal.
Hey, I feel you.
You know, it's not fun. I don't, for other people, I totally support like movement because it's joyful, movement because it helps me physically. So I do exactly as much as I need to and no more. Like I 100% support that. No movement at all. 100% support that. Like this is just a thing that I do in my spare time instead of like knitting a tea cozy. And I'm not sure if it's masochistic, but I'm just incredibly like competitive. So if I was knitting a tea cozy, I would be like, what's the biggest tea cozy that's ever been knitted? Like I would still be looking for some way to like do a thing to like set a big goal. Cause that's the only way that I seem to be able to motivate myself to do anything is to have like a big goal so that I have something I'm working towards. So anyway, that's kind of where, that's where the questionable choices probably start from.
And I was just joking around with the masochistic side of you. I was just like, all right, like you sign up for another one. I want to know the motivation.
Yeah. Questionable choices.
Yeah. Choices. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I think on the other hand, I'm one of the persons who have been bullied in school, specifically in PA, my whole life. And in Germany, we do have 13 school years. And so I really felt like I was on a silver platter, and it was before there was the internet widely available. I cannot dream to think about what would have happened if the internet was there when I was a teen. But, you know, I was there for everyone to gawk at, for everyone to comment on, for everyone to laugh about. Always lost on any teams. And the worst part is I wasn't only bullied by my fellow pupils, but also by the teachers. Yeah. So the only thing that, like, movement wise brought me joy consistently was dancing, because my mom had me do ballet classes when I was really young. I started when I was 4. And I finished when I was 10 because the teacher moved away. And I was just like, no, I want to train with my madam from Romatovsky. She's the best. I don't want to go to anyone else. You know how kids are, because, you know, you get attached to the teacher and you don't want to change. So that was my short-lived ballerina career. It's weird. It's really weird because in 2016, I was the only European in Virgie Tova's Babe Camp Jamaica. This is how I met her in real life. This is how I got a little bit more connected to the US fat activism bubble. This is how I met Joni Edelman, who is amazing. I love her so much. we became instant friends, not just because of the German heritage, but just because she's awesome. By that time, we had to share our story from the group of women, and without telling too much, which I wouldn't do anyway because it's very private, but all of us, like all 10 women, including Virgie Tova herself, first in their life had this experience of knowing my body is not quote unquote normal or right, or doesn't fit in, quite literally, when we were dancing as young children. And most of us, I think it's even 80% of everyone, had this experience during ballet classes. Go figure. So on the one hand, we all developed a love for dancing, still. But on the other hand, dancing was the first thing that showed us that we're different and that different wasn't good.
Yeah, it's, and Colleen Werner is doing incredible work within the ballet world to push plus size people. But yeah, luckily in some ways, I grew up in tiny towns. My dad was a cattle rancher, and so we moved around a lot. And I grew up in tiny towns in very rural America. And when you do that, you can pretty much do whatever you want, right? There's not enough kids, because my friends who went to big schools were like, oh, I did marching band, so I wasn't allowed to do anything else. And I was like, what? Like, no, in a small school, they're like, you can do band, choir, drama, French club, Spanish club, all the clubs, like whatever you want to do. And so, you know, because of that, I got to play sports. I was the captain of my high school cheerleading squad.
Whoa.
And I know, right? That's when I can almost always win that game, two truths and a lie with. And in dance, we had dance classes and I loved it, but it was always like whoever's mom had been part of the dance team in her high school. Right. So we never had proper instructors. So I was enthusiastic, but poorly trained when I came to ballroom dance. Right. But yeah, it, in a lot of ways, I now see how lucky that was. I hated it when I was doing it. I probably wouldn't do it again if given the chance, just because like the resources that you have available to you in those tiny towns. And then I was lucky that we lived in one town that was really diverse and that I had parents who, you know, were progressive in terms of their social values. But like a lot of the kids I grew up with, you know, are now the anti-masker neo-Nazi people of today. Oh, you know, and so I had a front row seat to see how that happens in these tiny towns. So there's a lot of downside to that. But, you know, the upside for me was that I got to do pretty much anything I wanted to try or do. And I was also a reasonably successful athlete, which helped not just with the body shaming, but in terms of body confidence, in terms of feeling comfortable at a gym. When I went to college, the first job I had was teaching aerobics at a gym. And it didn't occur to me that it would be a problem because like, there's just not enough people in Montana where I was at the time to turn people down for, you know, being an aerobics instructor or whatever. So I just like hauled in there and got hired and taught the classes. And then later, and this has been like kind of a, a cycle for me. Then when something happened really fat phobic, I was like, oh, right. Like this is happening, you know, right. I'm not like the other teachers here. I see that now. So I was really kind of naive going into a lot of it just because, you know, I was so focused on what I wanted to do and not thinking about it. And that it took me a while to become a fat activist. And I actually became a fat activist through dance and the fat phobia I experienced in the ballroom world. Yeah. But yeah, it dance is very often one of the first places for people where they're told you're not right. You know, especially ballet. My body was the least of my problems. My toes are wrong. My shoulders are wrong. I don't have the proper flexibility. Like even whatever Sandy's mom was able to say, like, this is not the dance form for
you. Sandy's mom.
whoever it was, wherever I was at the time. But yeah, it's sad to me that this form, and I get emails from people who say, I always wanted to dance, but never thought I could until I saw a video, you know, of you or of another fat dancer. And that to me, one of the crises of fat phobia is that there's this belief that you should never show a fat person as anything other than self-loathing and trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
Right. Or you're promoting obesity. Like that's a thing. Like Mary Lou Retton's on a speaking tour. She's not promoting shortness. Knock it off. Yes. But what this does is it means that fat people don't get to have or be role models.
Yeah.
You know, so there's tons of us doing stuff all over the world. And I have a group on Facebook called Fit Fatties that I co-founded with Jeanette DePatty. And it's people of all sizes who want to talk about weight neutral fitness. But like there, we got people in there sword fighting. We've got Highland Games, Cambridge, like people are chucking tree, you know, like all these different sports. People are skiing, every sport that people are like, you know, hey, I've always, you know, I wanted to try this obscure sport. There'll be like 10 people who are like, oh, I did it. And here's how you can do it in a, you know, a fat friendly way.
And amazing.
To me, that's amazing because fat phobia robs us of that experience on a grander scale a lot of the time.
Yeah. Who knows? You might enjoy bungee jumping. I mean, right. I would be scared shitless, but
not for me, but I will stand up and do a petition and do a protest for your right to bungee jump if you want to do it. Like they should work out how to do it for all size bodies for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I do have a client who wants to do all that, like who wants to go bungee jumping, who wants to go cliff diving, who wants to do like the, not bouldering, but yeah, want to go on these big hikes and stuff. Yeah. So she had to do research because she is at this, in Germany, they have this lovely thing where they post the maximum capacity of those parks, of the bungee jumping parks and whatever. Just like, oh yeah, up to X amount of weight. The first session I got with her was she came back from the dentist and she had the worst experience ever. I'm allowed to talk about it. I talked to her about it. I can talk about it publicly. So she went to the dentist and the dentist's chair broke down under her. And she got fat shamed so bad for this. It was our first session and I gave her like double the amount of time. I also didn't catch the first train back home. So I was on my way. And I was just like, this is outrageous. How can they do this? Don't they know that this was an old chair for sure? Like they break down all the time. They don't break down if a fat person sits on it like for 5 minutes. What are they fucking thinking? And I was just like, she said, no, it's fine. It's fine. Just like, I'm sorry that I'm talking all the time, but this really infuriates me. And she was just like, actually, I like that you're furious right now because it models the behavior for me that you have the right to be furious about that bull crap. You have the right to demand to be treated as like a human being with basic fucking dignity. I told her, yeah, you know, you will not be the first fat patient and you will not be the last fat patient in that dentist clinic for sure. The worst thing that was said to her that day was by a dentist assistant who said, because of you, we're not able to use this dentist operating room for the entire day. And we have to reschedule all the other appointments and you are responsible for it. And I was just like, whoa, really? First off,
because of your shitty chair, you're not able to use the rest of the day.
Yeah. so much for amazing German engineering, right? They cannot build a chair that holds more than X amount of weight. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Is that really German engineering? Like, really? Really? You claim to be the engineering nation in the world, and you cannot for the life of someone build a chair that can hold more than X amount of weight? Like, no. This is not how it goes. And also, like, first of all, they have insurance for this. So they have a replacement chair within 2 days. So it's 2 days of rescheduling some people's dental stuff. And if someone really comes in with an emergency, they can still swap patients, like, no big deal. It's absolutely not a case for shaming someone like that. Absolutely not.
Even if they have to shut down their practice for 2 days, it's not a reason to fat shame someone. The chair is the problem. You should be apologizing. Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yes.
What an awful experience this has been for you. This is not your fault. This is, you know, a bad chair. And, you know, we're going to fix it and we'll let you know. And, you know, we're so sorry. And, like, here's a, you know, lollipop for your trouble, like, something. Yeah. Not like there's no excuse for shaming people for crappy furniture. That's not how it goes.
Yeah. 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 But I think that this is the difference between the US and Germany, honestly, because I sometimes think, and it might be under a wrong impression, because of, like, in the US there have been, like, decades of fat activism. You're part of that legacy. And so I assume that the broad public knows that fat shaming is not cool anymore. Nope.
Nope. That isn't, I understand why it would seem that way. Mm. And if you spend a lot of time, like, in the fatosphere, it would seem that way. And a lot of us call our social media, like, I don't allow hate comments in my social media.
Same.
So if you were reading my Facebook thread, you'd be like, wow, everybody's really, like, with it. But in general here, and I don't know what the situation is like in Germany, so I wouldn't want to make a comparison, but I can tell you that here in the States, it's still a massive issue. It's still, we had people who, pedicure shops, they were trying to charge extra for fat patients because they might break the chair. So they were like, over X amount of money, you have to pay this, or, like, not allowing them. There have been massage therapists who have refused. Medical practices can for a while, and it may still be happening. Gynecology offices, OBGYNs, were allowed to say, no, we're just not taking patients above this certain weight.
What?
And in one case in Florida, their reasoning was, our tables just can't accommodate them.
Yeah, again, so, crappy furniture. Yeah. Crappy furniture.
Yeah. Yeah. The world of furniture that does not accommodate fat people, it's like a constant source of source material for me to write articles and do videos that are halfway comedic and halfway not.
Oh yeah.
About, like, it's just ridiculous. I have I'm launching a collaboration with Fatch, which is the fat sketch comedy show.
Nice.
Later, we're recording this in mid-November, so the day after Turkey Day here, we're launching a collaboration about fat-friendly seating.
Nice.
It's just such a fraught thing, and we've been taught that it's us and not the chair.
No, it's totally the chair.
You know, it's totally the chair, and if they, you know, it's one of those things, you knew fat people existed when you made this chair.
Yes.
You know, this office knew fat people existed when they bought it. At, you know, at a doctor's office, if I go in and there are no armless chairs, I'm always like, were you hoping not to have any fat patients? You just don't care if we can sit down. Like, help me understand your choices here. You know, and so here there's this belief, like, oh, how could I have known? I had no idea that these chairs wouldn't accommodate everyone. Like, that's not common information. Or, like, of course we can charge you twice as much for the same plane trip because our arbitrarily sized seats don't fit you. So, like, you have to pay twice as much as the person sitting next to you for the same service. Like, it is, yeah, I won't belabor the point, but it is definitely a huge issue here. I wish that we had made more progress. And the amount of work that's gone on in fat activism, the shoulders that I stand on, is tremendous, just in terms of like getting education, getting yeah. allies on board, teaching people that they don't deserve this. But like, to me, in the States, that's still a big part of our fight, is telling fat people we don't deserve to be oppressed. You know, and I think about, because comparing oppressions is tricky, but as a woman who's both queer and fat,
same.
When I came out, yeah, hey, what's up? When I came out, it was the mid-90s in Texas. And it was in Austin, which was like the most liberal part of Texas, but it was still the mid-90s in Texas. And I see the progress that we've made in queer activism versus fat activism. And a big part of queer activism, let's not fool ourselves, is that we've centered the desires and needs of white men, rich white men.
Yeah.
You know, and left everyone else behind, you know, in particular people of color, in particular trans yeah. people and trans people of yeah. color. So I don't want to like gloss over that. But there, you know, you see the change there. And I think the difference is people accepted like, oh, you know, queer people are probably always going to be queer. This is probably not a choice. Even though the correct civil rights argument is it doesn't matter.
Like exactly.
if I choose to be gay, if I was born, it doesn't matter. Like, this is a civil rights issue. And, you know, even at the time when I had come out, there was this, you know, growing number of, you know, queer and trans people who were like, no, we definitely deserve civil rights. This is definitely wrong. Yeah. But in fat community, there's a whole bunch of fat people who are like, no, I should be oppressed until I lose weight.
Yeah.
And so that's really
that's the same here.
That internalized oppression works against them. It works against the movement. Because when people are like, well, I'm fat and I think I should pay twice as much for a plane ticket, then that's a different, you know, argument and discussion to have. So that kind of internalized oppression, which is not a galloping shock, considering it's exactly what the diet industry spends billions of dollars to instill in people, right? I don't want to blame people for their internalized oppression at all, but like, that is a huge problem. And it's kind of where we're at in this country, I think, in terms of activism, is explaining to fat people why we deserve to be treated well, regardless yeah. of our size, or why we're our size.
Yeah, it's the same here. Basically, that's the short answer. It's the same here, except for the fact that I think that, and I'm sure that this is the same in the US too, that Germany really, as a culture, and I can say that as a cultural anthropologist, there you go. Germany as a culture has this fixation on health and youthfulness. So there are like stuff of, oh, well, like health is, what is it? Hauptsache gesund, which means, oh, the most important part is health. Or, you know, you have the same thing if a person gets a baby, oh, what's it going to be? A boy or a girl? Oh, well, as long as it's healthy, and all that bull crap. Oh, as long as it's healthy, which is not only healthist, it's also ableist, right? Yeah, that is very, very interwoven into German culture, like mm-hmm. a lot. I don't want to go too far, but that has been part of Nazi doctrine, to focus on health. And not to say that every German who is health conscious is a Nazi. This is not at all what I'm saying. But it has been part of German and European, Central European culture for a long, long time. This focus on healthy behaviors, health, a lot of exercise and all of that. So this whole movement from the US, like this hashtag healthy is the new skinny, like really found a great seed in Germany to flourish. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's like all about health. It's not really about being as skinny as possible or anything like that. It's not about fitting into a certain size. It's just, oh yeah, I'm the picture of health. I drink that in order to boost my immune system. Oh, I do that in order to be more healthy. And it's just healthy. And this is, to me, the most annoying part, because even let's say, even if you did all the things, I learned that in Babe Camp, all the things. I love it. I love that saying. If you were doing all the things, like the amount of stress that you would put yourself under in order to do all the things, in order to do them, quote unquote, perfectly, would rob you of the time that you would gain from being more, quote unquote, healthy. It's just, I mean, it's insane. It really, really is. Oh, and I wanted to tell you something about me that you might not know. I am actually a trained esthetician and nail tech. So when you were saying that the pedicurists would charge extra, I can tell you from my, like from my training and from my personal experience in the beauty industry where I worked, it doesn't fucking matter. Like it really, it makes no sense to me that people would say, oh, the pedicurist chairs would break down or anything like that. First and foremost, those things are fucking massive. They're so massive. I've never seen any of them break down ever in my entire life. And like, I don't know. Maybe if you have very, very big feet, then it's a little bit harder to remove calluses from them. Yeah. But I mean, on the other side, you economize on water. So, you know, it's just all relative. It doesn't really matter. Really.
Yeah. I mean, it just didn't make any sense. Like, cause then are you charging, like if someone has size 14 feet, are they paying more than like a size 6 foot? Like, no, that's not how it works.
You're not.
Yeah. And it was the fat phobia, you know, of the profession was bad enough, but then in the threads, people trying to find ways, well, they have to pick up your feet and like, it's so much harder, no, you know, to hold your feet if you're a larger person and they should be compensated for that. And just all of this ridiculous, the ways, the lengths that people will go to, the logic that they will defy in order to defend their fat phobia would be impressive if it wasn't just so horrifying.
Yeah.
People will, you know, go to any lengths of illogic in order to find a way to veil their big, oh, it's not about, you know, your body size. It's about your health.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. Well,
first of all, that's healthless. And also like, are you shaming people who don't look both ways before crossing the street? Like, are you running around, you know, yelling at people who have non-supportive footwear? Are you telling people who run marathons to knock it off because nobody needs to exercise that much and those sports injuries are expensive to the public? No, I didn't think so. Are you a fan of, you know, professional sports, right? The NFL, where everybody gets 10,000 concussions and they all go broke 2 years after they get out of being in the NFL. Like if anything is expensive to the public, it's that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for real.
You know, yeah. And I don't want to, you know, I don't mean to minimize that because what those guys are doing is like literally trading their long-term health for their short-term dream of playing in the NFL. And there's just a lot wrong with that whole system and with the NFL itself and the way that it makes money. But just in general, like whenever people say that, you know, oh, I just care about your health. Really? What are you doing to end weight stigma in medical care?
There you go.
Nothing. Okay. Then you don't get to have this conversation with me.
I loved also stepping stone on my way to fat activism. I loved a fat rant from Joy Nash.
Yeah. So great.
Yeah.
She's so amazing.
I know. There's such a good video series. I mean, you know me, I'm shameless. I write to everyone on social media, just, oh yeah, you've been inspirational. Thank you so much for doing that. So you know me, I'm shameless. My favorite mantra in life literally is everybody poops. That's my favorite mantra in life because it's so true. At the end of the day, we are all wiping down our asses, except those who have a butler to do it for them. But I mean, those don't count, I think.
The whole other thing.
True. So that's just, you know, we're all humans in one way or another.
Can I tell you a funny Joy Nash story?
Oh, please. Yeah.
So, I know her and I loved Fat Rants and I sent an email. I tried because I know like how much it means when people email me and say like your work helped me. Cause it's like one of those emails is worth like 10,000 trolls telling me fatty's going to fat or whatever. So right. True. So I try to do the same thing. I try to reach out to people and say, I saw this. I thought it was amazing. But I never really met her. And then as part of, Thatch, like I was telling you that group, the Fat Sketch Comedy Show, they did a show on the, Upright Citizens Brigade main stage, which is like a huge deal. And I got to do a little guest role in their opening number. They were singing the song Let's Get Physical, but like with a fat rewrite.
I saw it. I saw this. It was so great. And all had their little sweatbands on.
Yes.
And they had their neon 80s light workout.
Exactly.
I saw that bit. It was so amazing.
So I was the person who came out of the door in the lab coat and said, it's time for a public service announcement. And then like gave the little thing.
Oh,
so I come out of the door and the person in front of me is freaking Joy Nash.
No way.
And so I was like, don't think about it. So because I had exactly like 5-8 counts to get this script done. So I you know, hit my mark, hit my lines, got the hell off stage. But what I knew and no, she didn't at the time was that in like 2 minutes, I was going to do my first ever like high level stand up routine. They had let me warm up. I've been doing it for sort of my own, for both activism and my own fun. I've been doing some more like comedy. Yep, and so I was doing a 5 minute and I was like, I'm about to do 5 minutes of stand up in front of Joy Nash. And I was like, just don't think about it. Just don't like, just go out and do it. But like it was, and she was amazing and, you know, very supportive and cool. But I opened, because my thing was like, I slam open the door, I stride out and deliver this line. I slam open the door and there's Joy Nash.
Yeah. And for the German listeners, Joy Nash is the star of Dietland. And I talk about it all the time. But before she was the star of Dietland, she did a comedy bit that started out as a poetry slam, and then she turned it into a video series called A Fat Ren, and it's just amazing. It's been a source of inspiration for a lot of stuff in my life, especially the staircase wit bit.
Wit is amazing,
right? So it's when you get a fatphobic comment, then it's like you kind of fall down the stairway and you want to rewind and you want to say exactly like the sassy comeback that was in your head later, but you only have that sassy comeback later. And the way to tackle that is to practice. I cannot tell you how often I've been called pregnant. It's just my fat tends to hang low. That's just the way my fat is. And the worst part is not when people ask me, are you pregnant? I actually appreciate that just because it gives me an in. It gives me a choice. What I hate is when people presume I'm pregnant. It's just no, she must be pregnant. No, that's just no, because there's no other explanation. That's just she's pregnant. That's it. No, I'm just fat. Never seen a fat person in your life. Like,
yeah, I didn't know fat people were a thing.
You missed out on your anatomy class? What's that?
Marilyn Juan gave me my favorite comeback to that. And the way that my fat is, I don't tend to get mistaken for pregnant, which is kind of a bummer because Marilyn Juan gave me the best comeback ever. And she says, oh, I'm not pregnant, but the night's young.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I really like.
Me too. My favorite one so far in German, especially, it works better in German, is when people ask me, are you pregnant or what's it going to be, boy or girl? I'm just like, huh, I don't know. And then I touch my tummy. I'm just like, I think it's going to be a burger, maybe even with fries. I don't know yet. It's going to be a schnitzel, maybe with noodles. I don't know. So whatever it is, I feel like eating at that moment. It's just like, yeah. So that's my go-to. Another one of my go-tos is to just simply ask, no, are you? Like, are you? Really? Why, are you interested on how to get pregnant? Because I mean, that you come up and ask just random people on the street whether or not they're pregnant. Just, are you? Do you want to get pregnant? It's just, yeah. Especially great when it's a man. Especially great when it's just cisgendered, white, hetero man in front of you. And you're just like, no, are you? It's just the best.
Fun. Yeah. I teach a workshop called Talking Back to Fat Phobia.
Oh, lovely.
And that's one of the big things is like, you got to practice because when it happens and all the adrenaline hits and stuff, like if you've practiced it, you're like, okay, I know what to say. And I teach it like you would do, I don't know if we have in California, frozen yogurt bars are really
popular. Too.
Yeah. I assume you have it as well, but like in California, it's like a thing to go get a froyo. Right.
Yeah.
So it plays really well here, but it's like this idea, like, so we get this, you can have your plain one. So you just say like, I'm not interested in your opinion. Right. And then maybe you have some mix-ins. So you start by going, no, I'm not interested in your opinion at all. You know, and then if they don't get the hint, no, I'm not interested in your opinion at all. Move along. So you have these like things where you can decide, like, do I want just like the plain yogurt, or do I want to like add some mix-ins to this little conversation?
Nah, Reagan, I want all the trimmings.
I do too. I'm like, oh, you picked the right one today. Like, I have time for this. But yeah, I think practicing is really important. Enjoy that staircase wit video. If you're listening and you've not seen it, go to YouTube and find it right away. Her whole series is just Fat Rant, Staircase Witter. The entire series is just incredible.
Yep.
She does really powerful work.
I will link it in the, hopefully by that time, established show notes. I'm still working on my website at the moment, because I figured out I cannot do it on my own. Like, it looks crappy. I need to pay a professional. It's just, no, I don't want to unleash that demon onto the world. I need to pay someone who actually knows what they're doing. And so by that time, I'm sure that I can release it in the show notes. And so I wrote to her, and like, long story short, she wrote back. She wrote back. She thanked me. She said, oh, that's so sweet. That's so amazing. I did that over 10 years ago. I'm just so happy that it still brings people joy and all of that. So yeah, pretty awesome. I didn't know that you knew her personally. That is even...
Oh, I don't know. I met her. I don't know her for, like, we're not buddies, unfortunately. Sad for me. I did meet her, and she's quite lovely.
Oh, great. I'm just wondering, I tend to always ask one question in my podcast that is shifting the mood a little bit, but that opens up the room for opportunities. So that, here it goes. What question or topic do you get rarely asked or almost never asked, but you are passionate to answer?
That's an interesting question, because I do, like, the things I like to get asked, I work in those fields, so I tend to field questions a lot. About a lot of different things. I wish I got asked more about eating disorders community and the way that it intersects with fat phobia.
Yeah.
Because it's an area that people don't think about, but it has a huge impact on so many people, both fat people within eating disorder treatment and thin people who are still within that treatment being told to fear being fat, which is antithetical to recovery.
Yeah.
So, like, that piece of it, I wish that I got asked about more. I get to go. I've had the incredible fortune and privilege and luck to keynote a number of eating disorder conferences. Mm-hmm. And it's been so interesting, because my platform is completely unapologetic.
Yeah.
That size acceptance and health at every size are the only acceptable paradigm for eating disorder recovery and treatment. That it's completely unethical to have both an eating disorders recovery center and a quote unquote weight management center. Like, I'm sure it's quite profitable, but it's unbelievably unethical. Yes. And so that is what I say from the stage. Mm-hmm. And I tend to get standing ovations from everyone in the crowd except the table of sponsors.
Yeah.
Go figure. So it's possible this is why I don't get invited back to keynote. Because I piss off all the people who gave money to the conference. But I think it's really telling. Practitioners know, and there are some who don't, but many practitioners are clear on the problem. But the people who are at the center of it, who own the centers, who are getting rich off of this, while other people have their nose pressed to the glass and can't afford the unbelievably expensive treatment. Yeah. You know, even if they could get in it, even if it wasn't fat phobic, like, those are the people who reject the notion. So
yes.
To me, that's the kind of stuff that I like to talk about that nobody wants to talk about. And that, you know, as you go down the rabbit hole, it's really unfortunate, because you almost start to sound like a conspiracy theorist.
How so?
But you're like, because you're like, look, here's the deal. Like, they know that this is the case, but it's profitable to do these things. So, like, no, it's not ethical to amputate someone's stomach.
Yeah.
To put their previously perfectly healthy organ into a disease state in order to force behaviors that mimic an eating disorder, while also getting paid to treat the eating disorder behaviors that you're surgically forcing people into. Yes. Like, obviously that's not ethical.
Yes, it's a double
question. But that's what's happening. Yeah. And so, but it starts to sound a little like tinfoil hatty, you know, and you're like, no, like, this is really what's happening. And, you know, just to say like, nope, what you've been told about the connection between fat and health issues is completely untrue. And there's not a single study where more than a tiny fraction of people are able to successfully lose weight long-term. And success often means 5 pounds, right? Which, not for nothing, I could lose 5 pounds right now with a loofah and a haircut.
Yeah, and I have to go shit.
Then, right? Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. Literally, gain and lose 5 pounds every month of my period. It's not. But yeah, so, yeah. You know, and I know this to be the case because that's how I got into Health at Every Size, was trying to find the best diet and doing my own literature review because I had been trained in research methods and statistical analysis. So I had the skills to do that. Again, luck and privilege. But yeah, so like that is what's frustrating to me is like people just want to hear like, love yourself. And that's great. But you can't love yourself out of systemic oppression.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Amen to that. Yeah.
And so we have to dismantle that. So we need to talk about what's happening and who's making money off of that and what can be done about that. And those are the questions I wish I got more than like, I hate my body and how can I love it? That's an important question. And I want to answer that every single time someone has it, you know, and there are a ton of resources about that I can point somebody to, but I wish they were. The next question they asked was, why do I hate myself so much?
Yeah.
So that we can say this, you know, this is not about you. Like, let's dig deeper. Like, who profits off you hating yourself?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's look at that. So anyway.
No, I'm totally with you on that. And this is also one thing that is, I will not make friends when I say this. So fuck it. I mean, in Germany, I think it's a little bit what the body positive movement, but the good part of it and the fat acceptance movement has been a few years ago. So I think we are a few years back, which is okay because it just kind of, you know, traveled over. So there are a lot of gorgeous, gorgeous plus size models and speakers and like personalities and whatnot that are promoting the love yourself no matter your size message, but they do not dig deeper. That's it. And it's all about feel good. It's literally, they literally use that. So it's all about, oh yeah, learn how to feel good in your body. Find your feel good body. And this is like it's still, you know, it's still not quite there. It's not like fat rights. It's more, oh yeah, find your feel good body and find your feel good food and find your feel good movement and whatever. So it's a little bit hazy. It's a little bit soft language, how it's called. Right. You know exactly what soft language is.
Yeah.
Cultural anthropologist. There you go. So it's soft language and it draws people in, of course, but they do no system critiquing whatsoever. They tell you, oh yeah, you're fed up with diets. You don't have to diet. I show you how you feel good. But it's not like, no, it's the fucking patriarchy that is profiting off of it. It's like a teeny tiny amount, like I think 10 people or something like that, like a ridiculously small amount of middle-aged and older, cis, white, hetero dudes, like men, who are profiting off of millions of people, mainly women, but also other people of all genders, starving themselves every single day using their products, like fucking shakes and whatnot, in order to want to fit a very, very tight mold that they have set for the whole society that people never were supposed to fit in to begin with.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think it's important to help people like love themselves and be comfortable with themselves. But I think the problem is what we do is we put, and it's not just fat people who experience this, we put the responsibility for dealing with the results of systemic oppression on the individual.
Yes.
So what, every message you get in the world tells you to hate yourself and you don't love yourself? Like, what's wrong with you? right? You're facing tremendous oppression in every aspect of your life and you're depressed about that. Like, you need to snap out of that.
Yeah.
You know, which, and don't even get me started on the way that we treat mental illness. But in general, it's a whole other can of crappy worms. But yeah, this idea that like we should love ourselves without any discussion of why we wouldn't to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, and how much money that makes for other people.
Yeah.
You know, beyond the fact that it doesn't work, right? The weight loss industry is built on a repeat business model.
Of course.
They know that almost everyone loses weight short term, and then almost everyone gains it back long term. Yeah. So what they've done brilliantly is get us to credit them for the first part of that biological response, and then blame ourselves and blame everybody else for the second part of the biological response.
Yep.
And that's been incredibly profitable for them. And so we all hate ourselves because we think we're failing when we should succeed, when in fact, the research tells us almost no one does.
Indeed.
So that underpinning, anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead, because it's exactly what I think sets me and some of my colleagues apart from the rest of the anti-diet feel-good coaches in Germany. Because most of them are only targeting the feel-good part of it. I mean, I am just one of three certified intuitive eating counselors in the whole of Germany. 18 million people. Only three people have completed the training up until this point.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of like, be happy with yourself and be pissed at the system that brought you to a place where you have to take classes to figure out how to love the body that you live in every day. Like, take the classes, but then like be happy and be mad.
Yeah.
Because this shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, it shouldn't be happening. Be angry about the time that you were that was robbed from you when you grew up, and when people told you, oh, because they are not doing that to boys. Like, boys don't get like dissected and, you know, pinched and whatnot when they grow up. Oh, you are a little bit fat here. Oh, those chubby cheeks. Da, da, da. No, they don't. Or at least they don't, it doesn't have negative connotations like it does with girls, women and femme, and femmes. That's that. And get mad at that. Get mad for the fact that you have been treated completely differently from your brothers. Yeah, boys around you. And reclaim that time by getting hella mad, doing all the things and all that. So yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like waking up and not hating ourselves is a revolutionary act in this culture as a fat person.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to be like, I am a fan of activism and I like to do like petitions and protests and different projects, but just living your life unapologetically is activism in this culture.
Yeah.
You know, waking up and not hating yourself is activism. Saying, oh, I don't actually participate in negative body talk, so I'm going to go over there, is a huge piece of activism.
Yep.
You know, it can be little. There's no action you can take that's too small, and we can use activism to feed ourselves.
Oh yeah,
right. It can be, activism itself can be a self-care practice.
Absolutely, yes.
Where, you know, we feed ourselves by pushing back against the injustice that we experience, and just naming it. Okay, that's fat phobia. That's what I'm experiencing right now. Even if I can't say anything, even if I can't do anything, even if it's being done by a huge power structure that I don't feel empowered to change, just naming it. It's not me. This is oppression. That's what I'm experiencing right now because of how I look. That's what's happening. Can be incredibly powerful in terms of taking back that power and, you know, living with that anger of being part of an oppressed group.
I mean, I could talk to you all day. I really could. Yeah, we share a common sense of wicked humor a little bit here and there, and a little bit of sarcasm. I could talk to you all day, but it's late for me, midday for you.
Thank you for doing it at this time. I really appreciate it.
Don't worry. Don't worry. The nervousness keeps me awake. and thank you for doing this, because, like, honestly, this is really awesome. It's just, I cannot put it any other way. And it has been
my
a delight.
Pleasure.
It really has been a delight.
Likewise.
So what kind of new projects do you have? Oh, well, first of all, where can people find you? And what exciting new things do you got cooking?
So danceswithfat.org is kind of the center. And across the top of that, you'll find all of my social media, my YouTube channel. And I'm doing more like fun projects with YouTube because it's both activism and kind of feeds me as an activist. And I'm enjoying that. So that's kind of the center of it. You can find my workshops and the videos of previous workshops, my books, dance classes, all of it. So that's kind of the epicenter of where to find me, danceswithfat.
Thank you, Reagan. This has been so nice. I just, yeah, thank you so much. I will stop the
recording now. Thank you. Thank you.
Like what you've been hearing so far? Why not become a supporter of this podcast and hop on over to patreon.com/largerliving. There I set up three different kind of tiers for you. You can either treat me to a coffee once a month, a burger with fries once a month, or buy me brunch. And each tier will unlock different kind of benefits that you get, from voting rights to who I'm going to interview next and what kind of questions I'm going to ask, to exclusive Q&A podcast episodes that you will get nowhere else. Help me spread the anti-diet goodness in Germany and throughout the world by hopping over to patreon.com/largerliving. Thank you so much. You can always support this podcast by giving me a 5-star rating and review on Apple iTunes. You're not just doing that to make me Insta famous or iTunes famous or anything like that, but by giving a rating and a review to this podcast, you help push the anti-diet message and this podcast up in the searches for other people to see. So, you know, this podcast is listed under the category of health and eating and nutrition. And I don't have to tell you what kind of podcasts are number one at the moment. Yeah, that's right. At the beginning of the year, all the diety BS podcasts are ranking the charts. With your contribution, you ensure that more people hear the anti-diet message, more people consider not going on a diet at the beginning of this year, and more people even hear about intuitive eating. Thank you so, so much. And have a great start of the year, because you deserve it.
You may have noticed I am large. I can't hide it. It's no secret. It's a fact. I'm technically obese. I'm wobbly, jiggly, and round. In a word, quite frankly, I'm fat. The word fat can sometimes cause a bit of shock. Some people are offended, but I'm not. I've owned it and reclaimed it, and I'm not afraid to say it. I'm fat, and frankly, I rock. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large, and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks. The war on obesity's a pile of shit. They just wanna sell you one more diet book. They spend $650 billion round the world, so we're at war against the way that people look.